Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Abaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Eliza Manner, international top-ranking visionary innovator and venture capitalist. Eliza, thank you for coming in today and sharing your deep experiences with our audience.
Thank you for inviting me to this interview.
Eliza, I know you're such a busy person. I know you've done a lot. So since we last talked, can you share lessons from your work in China and elsewhere?
Do you really want me to tell you what I did in this period of time? Basically, what we did during this period of time, we developed our program in China. This was our main task and the most important achievement that we can share with you. Okay? So what we did in China, we established an operation that is a systematic operation. We call it an incubator, but it may make some confusion here, this term, because it is used in many countries. In our country, the term incubator is used for entities which are developing new technologies. Now, in China, we are not going to develop technologies. We are going to take Israeli companies that already developed technologies, and out of these technologies, they already have their own product based on the unique technology they develop. And in China, they are going to define the final product and commercialize it. This is the main purpose of this program. And the reason we are taking Israeli companies is because the two countries, Israel and China, have exactly very complementary values. In Israel, we have sources of many, many technologies, but we are lacking markets, we are lacking industrial base, while in China, we have huge markets, we have a fast-developing economy, we have a big market, we have industrial base, and this is a paradise for new products to develop. Now, we are also living in an environment where the government of China and also other governments realize that it is not possible anymore to develop their economies based on traditional product manufacturing, more efficient manufacturing of traditional products or low labor cost manufacturing, because there is a lot of competition from other countries, and it is very difficult to face this competition when the standard of living is growing and the salaries are growing. So there is a limit to which these kind of emerging economies can develop based on manufacturing of traditional products more efficiently or lower cost. So the understanding of this government is that the only way to develop, to keep developing their economy, is by introduction of new product into market. And the raw material of this new product is technology. Now, this is exactly, but on the other hand, technology is not sufficient. You need also an industry, you need the market, you need commercialization capabilities. And this is exactly the combination between Israel and China, because Israel might be the source for these technologies, while in China we can commercialize a new product. Now, the main problem that we are facing at the beginning was that many Israeli companies tried in the past to do this. So we did not invent the idea of cooperation, of commercializing products in China. This is not an idea that we invented. So Israeli companies were going to China and trying to establish joint ventures with Chinese companies, but the Israeli companies were not familiar at all with Chinese market, with Chinese character, with Chinese culture. So usually, this kind of joint ventures end up by one that is claiming that the other one cheated him, one that he did not did not fulfill its commitment. So it's always they end up with a lot of complaints, one on the other, and the business is not there. So we decided to adopt and to adapt another model by establishing in China wholly owned entities of the Israeli companies. And so the Chinese companies, which are wholly owned by the Israeli companies, can develop, grow, be acquire some Chinese character and Chinese habits, and when they become more mature, to be able then to establish joint ventures with a Chinese company. So this is what our incubator is doing. It's taking companies with novel technologies and trying to let these companies mentor, coach, and support these companies in order to commercialize their new product, unique product, in starting in Chinese market, but also from China in the international market. So this is a basic idea.
Now, that's a fascinating program. How many cities are you in China right now?
We are in 4 cities so far. And the point is that the local government in each of the cities, they support the Israeli companies that are moving to China. They are also supporting financially the management company of the incubator, and we are one of the partners in the management company of each incubator, and we are partners with a local entity which is somehow linked to the government, and the government is supporting financially the companies which are moving. They are supporting them for a period of 2 years, and here the basic model of this support is provided by, here we made an adaptation of the Israeli model of the Israeli government, that the Israeli government is supporting the companies in Israeli technological incubators. So we adapted the same procedure, the same model, but adapted it to the new conditions. First of all, to the new conditions of doing it in China, in a different geographical region. And secondly, doing it for companies which are developing business and not developing technology.
And what's your expansion forecast in China?
You know, I don't know if I tell you a secret, but China is a big country, you know. So I don't think that it is a limit to how this kind of program, if it is successful, how it can develop in many cities in China, because this is a way for the Chinese to develop their high-tech industry, because the companies are Chinese companies. It doesn't matter that they are owned by foreign companies like Israeli companies. What matters is that they are Chinese companies, they are operating in China, they are hiring Chinese people, they are paying taxes in China. So all these companies are developing the Chinese economy. This is for the short term. For the longer term, of course, the Chinese companies, the Chinese pure companies, will try to implement this example and also become entrepreneurs. So instead of developing gradually the industry, the high-tech industry by entrepreneurship, what we did here, we did a jumping from the entrepreneurship, bringing the entrepreneurs from Israel with the technologies, and now jumping into the field of business development. So this is our novelty that we brought to this program.
That sounds like a fascinating program, and I can see great success for the future of this program. Now, how does your China work contrast with Chile and Slovakia?
It is a different situation here. With Chile and Slovakia, it started from a different standpoint. And what we did with, because when we looked on China, we tried to identify the complementing values of each nation. So we try to find a way that both nations will benefit. In the case of Israel and China, Israel is benefiting that the Israeli companies are going into a market where they are supported to develop their businesses, and the Chinese, China benefited that companies with novel technologies are coming to China and are able to develop new products. In other words, the high-tech industry, because my definition of high-tech is a new product. It doesn't matter if this product is, I don't know, as you saw in my book, is a flying car, okay? Or if the new product is computerized shoes. It doesn't matter if the shoe industry is considered to be a low-tech. But once you introduce a new product, it starts to be high-tech. So this is a benefit of China. China is benefiting by introducing new products. Israel is benefiting by having an exit to the market, not an exit for capitalization, but an exit to the market of its company. Now, what we are trying to do in Chile, we faced a different problem. In Chile, we faced the problem that the Chilean government came and said, look, we have many entrepreneurs here, but they are not successful. What is the secret? How Israel could, how come that in Israel the entrepreneurs are more successful? So my answer was that in Israel, we have the different ambient conditions. And you know, it is not sufficient that somebody has an entrepreneurial character, an entrepreneurial culture, an entrepreneurial approach in life. It also depends what kind of environment is around him. And then we told them, you know what, bring your entrepreneurs for a period of time in Israel and let us train them, let them work with their hands. Because as you saw in my book, for us, entrepreneurship is not a science. It is not something that you can teach. It is an art. Now, an art you don't teach, you train. But if you're not talented, it doesn't help. But on the other hand, if you are talented and if you are not trained, it also doesn't work. So we are trying to take entrepreneurs from other countries where in these countries, what they are lacking is the environment, the ambient conditions. Okay?
So do you find that the conditions are somewhat similar in Slovakia then, the same kind of process?
Yes, Slovakia is also a small country, a relatively small country. It's also a relatively small country. And I don't think that we can find in Slovakia or in Chile the same mechanism to work, the same mechanism that we are operating in with China. But, for example, in Slovakia, we can think about working with the towards the European market, being the gateway to the European market. Or in Chile, being the gateway for South America. So it's a different approach here. But the point of all our program is to find this kind of force multiplier. And this is our basic term, is to find the force multipliers, because I believe that in the modern world, there is no perfect nation. No China is perfect, no the United States is perfect, of course not Israel. I don't have to mention that even. But the secret, the key is how to create the cooperation between two countries in order to take advantage of this force multiplier between them. In other words, invent a new arithmetic, that 1 plus 1 equals 11.
Now, that's fascinating, and I know recently Kazakhstan has also expressed interest because of your global leadership and your work with countries. I would imagine then the process in Kazakhstan would be similar to something like what you're doing in Slovakia, but, of course, adapted to their local conditions.
Right. And that's our first step would be to learn, to inseminate, to understand the local conditions in Kazakhstan, to understand also what their objectives are, and then tailor a program for Kazakhstan, which will be different than the program in China, different than the program in Slovakia, different than the program in Chile.
Exactly, and it's that tailoring that's really key. Now, what are your recommendations for countries wanting to set up entrepreneurship programs?
First of all, to understand that without a real involvement of the government, it will not happen. It is a necessary condition. It is not a sufficient condition, but it is a necessary condition in order to initiate. This kind of process of entrepreneurship, you know, it is like in a chemical equation, like in a chemical reaction. You have the critical masses around, and in every country, there are many people with entrepreneurial character. There are markets, there are industries, but in order for it to happen, this kind of entrepreneurship, you need a catalyst. Now, the government can be the catalyst of this chemical reaction, where the critical masses exist, now you need the catalyst. This happened in Israel, when in Israel we had many, let's say it was in the 80s, 90s of the previous century, when we had many high-tech companies, but no venture capital industry, for example. And then what happened, the government made two very smart and important steps. One is to establish the venture capital industry, to go on one hand of the high end, the high tech, the venture capital industry that will invest in high tech companies, and on the other hand, from the bottom, to come with the technologically incubators in order to create the deal flow. So by that, you provide to the entrepreneurs, you provide them the deal flow, the sources of technologies on one hand, and on the other hand, you provide them the funding, because venture capital is a source of funding for high-tech companies, because high-tech companies cannot grow by bootstrapping on one hand, and on the other hand, they are not bankable. You cannot get any money from the bank. So the venture capital is the only source, only the major source, because there are other sources, angels, but this is a major source of investments, of funding for high-tech companies.
Eliezer, now we come to this remarkable book that you've put together, From Startup to Smartup. It's just an amazing book. And we're going to ask a series of questions about this book. And the first question is, what prompted you to write this book?
A few factors here played a role here. First of all, our background here is that we are not young. So we accompanied here in Israel the whole process that started with entrepreneurs, government support to high-tech companies, creation of the critical mass of high-tech companies, then exit to stock market, and then establishment of the venture capital industry, and then corporate venture capital. So we went through all the phases here. It happened relatively, it was a very fast process, because all this happened in something like 30 years in Israel. And because I'm not so young, I accompanied all this process together with my other partners. So we learned many lessons from that. And after learning these lessons, we went to apply them in China. And in this book, what I wanted to, my basic message, so let's put it that way, the basic message of this book is how Israel, that started, as you know, as a startup nation, became a startup nation, and everybody knows why that Israel is a startup nation. And the next question is now, how Israel can capitalize on as they already do. It is not possible to continue being the startup nation. We have to make the next step. So the next step is a jump. So this is why the book is called From Startup to Smartup, because we want to see how we can use the fact that we are now today the startup nation in order to make the jump of a smartup nation. And this jump, an example of how to do this kind of jump, is the program that we carry out in China, which is a result of this cross-national force multiplier between China and Israel. So this is what drove me to write the book. First of all, to explain what is the history of the Israeli high-tech and venture capital industries. Then to share the lessons to be learned from this experience. Then to show what the vision is, because everything that is done has to start with a vision. Otherwise, you lose your objective on the way. So we have to understand what our objective is. And then to see the action between, as we say, vision is not sufficient. Vision without action is a daydream. But action without vision is a nightmare. So we have to find the combination between vision and action in order to achieve something. So we have here the example of the Israel-China program, which has a vision, and the vision is based on the trend and on understanding what the trend of the modern economies is by keeping developing the economies only by introduction of new products into the market. Otherwise, you get stuck, you get to a plateau that you cannot grow your economy anymore. And on the other hand, to have the combination of the technologies, to have an accelerated plan where we can provide technologies without waiting, like Israel waited to develop its own technologies. Now use existing technologies and come immediately to go and commercialize them to see how you can capitalize on this kind of technologies. Because without transforming the technologies in products and commercializing the product, technologies have no value. And the state of Israel understands it very well.
Now, you mentioned in your book, you sort of talk about the history of the high-tech and VC industries in Israel. What are your most important lessons that you are sharing?
I would say that the most important lesson that I would share is the kind of role that the government can play. As I mentioned before, the government role is not sufficient, but is necessary. But this role has to be, is a very well-defined role. Because I was involved in with several governments in the world to do the same thing, to help entrepreneurs, to help venture capital industry to develop. And the big mistake that is being done by many governments around the world is based on the fact that the government, when they bring money to the entrepreneurs or to venture capitalists, they want to share the success. And this is a big mistake that the governments are doing, sharing the upside with the companies, because the governments are not a private entity that is looking to have financial profit. The profits of the government are growing the economy, having jobs, fighting the unemployment, increasing the export. This is the real objective of the government, because this is the way that the government behaves, is the way that the government collects taxes. But if the government wants to play the role of the private sector, it is a big mistake, because they are not able to play this role. So you have then two partners that cannot fit together. And this is the mistake. So what the government of Israel did finally, and I don't want to say that they are smart. Yes, they are smart. But I think that also many mistakes were done until they reached the real model. And what is the secret? Is the secret that the government of Israel is providing support to the companies and to the venture capitalists, is providing support. But this support has two conditions. The support is never given at the level of 100%. You never have a government participation of 100%. The government wants to see the private sector sharing the risk with the government. The government and the private sector are sharing the risk. But in case of success, the entire upside belongs to the private sector. In other words, is that if the company or the venture capital fund is successful, they return the money to the government in different ways, different techniques to return the money. And after they return the money that the government invested, they own 100%. So if the company became a company that has 10 times the value that it started, and the government invested invested $1, and now the $1 that the company, that the government invested values $10, the private sector brings to the government the $1 back, and now they own the whole entity, the whole fund, the whole company, whatever it is. So this is the secret that we can share about the ways that the Israeli government was successful in establishing the high-tech industry and the venture capital industry.
Now, that's an extremely valuable lesson, and I think many countries wouldn't realize that. So they need to read your book, and they need to understand this critical feature that you mentioned. Now, mm-hmm. In your book, you also talk about the DNA sequence in high-tech. What do you mean by that? What is the DNA sequence in high-tech?
I think that high-tech company has a DNA in it. It has something that characterizes it that is common to all high-tech companies. And I would like to share with you this DNA. So this DNA, first of all, starts with education. Education is, they are the roots. A country has to have an infrastructure, a very strong and healthy infrastructure of education. And when I say education, it's all the levels of education, okay? You don't prepare robots. You give all kinds of education to your people, and those who are entrepreneurs will become entrepreneurs in case you establish the right environment around. After basic education, you have the research. The research, the science, the research is actually the root of innovation, because you have new ideas being developed. You prove in the lab that something new works, and many times in innovation, you come not only to solve problems, but you many times come in innovation, in science and innovation, by having the solution and trying to invent the problem and not the solution. And this happens many times when in the academia, you develop new technology, new ideas, new science, new applied science, and then somebody comes from the industrial sector, from the technological oriented sector, and he is asking himself, what is this good for? And once this question is being asked, I think that the answer is much easier to give than to ask this question. Then there are many ideas how to apply, how to make the result of this applied research, how to make them an innovation, something new that is good for something in our life. And then comes the innovation. Comes the innovation where somebody is saying, okay, I have a problem, I have a solution. It doesn't matter who is the chicken and who is the egg. If the problem is the chicken or if the solution is the chicken. Okay? But at least we have a combination here of a problem and a solution. So this is the innovation. Entrepreneurship is the next step of this DNA genome. And entrepreneurship is taking an innovation and trying to see its commercialization, to try to define a product out of this innovation. And this is done in Israel by the technological incubators. The previous steps are being done in universities, starting with pure research and going into through applied research, and then having the people with bright ideas, with creativity. And then the entrepreneurs in the technological incubators are taking the technology, a new technology, transforming it in a product. And then only at this stage, when the company starts to be not a seed company, but a startup company with a defined product, with a defined market, with a business plan, then you see the venture capitalists coming into the picture, and they provide the money for the company to develop fast, because as I mentioned before, this company cannot develop bootstrapping. High-tech companies must have external infusion of money, and this source is venture capital. And only then, when the company is mature, when the company starts its business and develops its business, then the company has a value. Not the product has a value. The product, of course, has value. But we are looking here on the company, because in venture capital, for venture capitalists, the product is the company. The product is the company and not the product of the company. So here we are establishing a company with value. And once this company creates a value of it based on its sales and its profits, then we go and trade with the company on stock market, or we sell it as a acquisition or merger or acquisition. So this is the sequence of this DNA of this high-tech genome.
Now, in all of this, you talked about venture capital, but in the book you also talk about sort of the ecosystem of financing, which includes angels and venture capital, private equity, investment banks, incubators. Can you sort of very quickly distinguish between these different sort of funding sources?
Yes, because they appear at different levels of the development of the company. Angels start, who are the angels? Most of the angels are entrepreneurs who had exits, who created their own companies. They were successful, had exits, have money now, and they want to do it again. To do it again, not only by themselves, but they want to be involved with other entrepreneurs, for them providing not only the money, but also the mentoring, the coaching. So usually angels are not pure financial investors. They are, I would call them more strategic investors, strategic early stage investors, because they are looking to bring added value to the company in which they are investing. And after that, we have the venture capital. The venture capital, when the company, graduates an incubator, the company should get a venture capital investment from a venture capital fund. The company already became became a startup company, they get venture capital investment. And then we see the private equity that appears a little bit later than venture capital, because they want to see companies with sales, with profits, and so on. Then when the company builds its value, we already see the investment banks that are preparing the companies for exit, and then you have the stock market. So these are the whole steps, all the steps here. Now, I did not mention at the beginning that the government plays the role of the applied science and the incubator, the technological incubator, because these are entities which are heavily funded by the government. All the others are funded in a different way by the government, different levels, with the same principles, but different levels by the government. But the government is playing a very important role in the initialization of the whole process with applied research and incubators.
Now, Eliza, in these different kind of roles that can happen as incubator, angels, VC, private equity investment banks, which hats and roles have you played amongst all of these that we just listed?
Well, in China or in general?
In general.
In general, I went through all the stages. I was involved in incubators and in venture capital, and I also made the angel investments, and I worked with investment banks. I worked with corporate venture capital. So I went through all the stages. That's why I was exposed. I was lucky that I was exposed to all these phases and understanding where and who are playing the right role in each phase.
Now, earlier you talked about how governments can help startups and be involved in this process with incubators. And you also, in some ways, have talked about where governments can fail, and that is if they want to hold all the success and not pass that success on to the private marketplace. Or, are there other ways that governments can fail?
Government, I think that the failure mechanism of the government is only when they want to share the upside, the financial upside, with the private sector. Because this is a combination between, between apples and oranges. They don't fit.
Exactly, and that's a mistake, I think, that governments probably still don't understand. And I guess it's great to emphasize that part of it where they...
Yeah, it is very difficult also in China to convince the government. The government says, okay, if I invested money, I want to see the financial profit. They say, no, you don't have to see the financial profit out of this investment, the direct financial profit. Let the private sector have the financial profit. You be happy that you establish an industry, you get taxes, you solve the problem for unemployment, you increase your exports, you increase your GDP. That's what you do. That's your profit. So why do you want to have two profits?
Exactly. And then also in your book, you talk about cross-national force multipliers. And you've earlier gave an example how Israel is conducting this or collaborating with China and the Chinese governments in different ways through you being the catalyst, you being an enabler of all of this, and really becoming then a cross-national force multiplier. That's correct, right?
Right, right. This is exactly. So Israel and China is one example of a cross-national force multiplier. There are many, I think that I don't say all, but many, most of the combinations of two countries that you can take, if you are creative, you will find a force multiplier between these two countries. And I always say that if I consider myself venture capitalist or investor, no matter, we have to be not less creative than the entrepreneurs in whom we invest, we make the investment. So you also have to come every time to come with new ideas, creative ideas, to introduce new model, new mechanism, new operational mode.
Eliza, towards the end of your book, you have this most entertaining story. It's just such a wonderful story. Are you able to share any elements of that, or should we just tell people they've got to read the book?
They have to read the story. They have to read the story. But the example is that we have to find a way in education. Education has to be a process. Look, I'm not expert in education, so don't misunderstand me. But my feeling is that in education, you have to leave the people that you are educating to show their own creativity. Because what? We are human beings. What do we have? We are not faster than computers, for sure not. We are not able to store more information than computer can. I'm not sure we can, and we do not have the memories that the computer has. So what do we have? What is our contribution? Our contribution is creativity. And the question, how do you encourage creativity? And this has to be taken into account in education. And I have the feeling that in many countries, including our country, this is not exactly taken into account in order to let people and let people be creative and have a figure of merit for creativity. I don't see it happens enough in Israel, and I think that it doesn't happen enough in other countries as well. So this was the story, is be creative. So these guys that had many answers to the problem, but did not want to show the answers that all the people are waiting to hear it, he was a non-conformist. So he was, in a way, he was creative, but bring all kinds of solutions, but not the solutions that all the people around were waiting for. So this is a lesson that has to be learned.
Yeah,
be creative.
I'm just thinking of that story now. I'm telling you, to the audience, you have to get the book. It's just an amazing story. It's quite humorous as well in many ways. And it does very much illustrate many concepts by that story. So now, you had this remarkable person speak recently at a forum that you set up in Israel. Can you share a little bit about that at all? Or
about whom? About Ruha Rehani?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, she's a great person. She's a great person. And also young, not like me, old. So her approach in life is that the future of our economies will be based not on competition, but on cooperation. It's very difficult to understand it, because competition is something very basic in our lives, in our brains, in our behavior. You always have to compete with somebody to beat him and to be better, to use your elbows, compete with him and let him go away. You are the winner. In our modern world, cooperation will bring much better results, because here you bring added value of people that are participating. So, and the question is, how to create this environment, how to create this culture of cooperation rather than competition? It's not that competition doesn't work. Competition works. It's not that the competition will disappear. Competition will be there. But try to think, who are not competing? Usually leaders are not competing, because leaders, they are taking all the, they have a vision. They have something that they believe in. And then they see the objective and they want to reach this objective. So if you can create self-confidence in people, if you can create to let people understand why they do what they do. And this, I take the example of a book that I read recently, an excellent book of Simon Sinek called Start With Why. I don't think that I have to explain what it means. You understand from the title of the book what it is about. So we have to understand how we start our journey with a why. Because if we forget what the why is, we lose the game. So here it is a combination between understanding why and also creating cooperation.
Eliza, you really generate so many questions in my mind, but I know that you have to leave very, very soon. So I'm going to now just maybe ask maybe one or two more questions, and I know you have another meeting you have to go to.
Right.
In this question here, I mean, you travel a lot, you work extensively, you speak extensively. Do you have a particular story that you want to share? Maybe something unexpected, amazing, amusing?
One story. I'll share with you one story, okay? Share with you one story which is very important for me. And you know, again, it is related to China. And you ask me about the story, so I'll tell you a story. In China, usually people from all the branches, and it is a culture, They're asking, they always say, seeing is believing. But I tell them, look, it's a program. How can you see the result? You first start the program, you work on the program, have the result, and then you'll see. So first you have to believe and then see. They say, no. We want to first to see and then we believe. They say it doesn't work. And I give them an example. And I have a nice guy from the government, from the Chinese government, whom I was very lucky to know, have his daughter, very nice daughter, very smart, young, smart daughter. I was only sorry that I was not younger than I am. And I asked him, tell me, when your wife was pregnant with your daughter, you had some dreams about her. You imagined that she will be successful in life, that she will become, I don't know, a lawyer, a professor, a doctor, whatever. You had something in your imagination, in your dreams. But then your wife delivered the baby and was a very nice looking baby, but you had to feed the baby, to take the baby hand by hand, and then to take the child to school, to let them learn. So you spend many, many years until you really saw your dream becoming true. So this is believing is seeing. You see the results because you believe that it will happen. So not seeing is believing, believing is seeing. So this is something that I am happy to share with you, this kind of story, because it is part of the culture. Culture, seeing is believing is a culture. And I think that it is not the right culture. You must have a dream before you go and also have to understand that in order to make the dream true, to become true, you have to go a very long way, to work hard, and then be successful and happy. And you'll be successful. Because as it is written in the book, you know, in entrepreneurship, winners are losers who never quit. Success is management of failures. And only in gambling, losers are winners who never quit. So we are not in the game of gambling. We are in the game of entrepreneurship. So we have to believe, and then it will happen. Believe, try hard, fail, try again, fail, try again, and it will happen. So believing is seeing, and not seeing is believing.
And one final question, Eliza, and this is about your book, From Startup to Smartup. It's a remarkable, amazing book. The audience must read it. Where can they get it? And is there one additional comment you wish to make about the book in closing?
First of all, they can find the book on our website. They can find the book on our website. And I think that you know our website is www.shirat/enterprises.com. Yes, the message of the book, again, the message of the book is a vision of cross-national cooperation, of establishing a cross-national force multiplier. And this is the way that I start the book, saying that, yes, as President Obama said, yes, we can make a change to leverage and promote economies for the benefit of mankind. We must initiate and create cross-national force multiplier. And let me just quote Albert Einstein, who said that the measure of intelligence is the ability to change. And another quote of him is that we shall require substantially new manner of thinking if mankind is to survive. So we are living in a period of time where things change so fast, and they will change much faster in the future. Look what happens now in what happened in the last 10 years, happened maybe in 500 years before. So we are going forward in an exponential way, in an exponential rate. So this is my message, that we can make a change. And I think that many people are looking how to make a change in our world, because our world needs this change to help mankind, to make the life better for people. There are so many poor people in the world. There's so much suffering in the world, and so much that can be saved. So we will not save the whole world, but if you can save one person, it is sufficient.
Well, Eliza, we're at the end of this interview, and you have an amazing history of success. You are a global pioneer. You have impacted the planet in very positive ways through your entrepreneurship, through your vision, through your innovation. And again, thank you for coming in today to do this interview. We are indeed fortunate. And thank you for sharing your deep experiences with our audience.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you smart questions and smart remarks. Thank you very much, Stephen.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Eliezer Manor, international top-ranking visionary innovator and venture capitalist.